You're listening to Easy Way Broadcasting, powered by WTV. We have a fantastic show for you. We're doing it the easy way, baby. And we're giving you the easy way to success. Are you ready to ride with your host, Eric Zuli? Check out his blog at HollywoodGetGuy.com and follow him on Twitter at Eric Zuli. Here he is, the hardest working man in Hollywood, Eric E.Z. Zuli.
Yes, sir. What's going on, guys? It's another wonderful Friday, 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. I'm your host, Eric E.Z. Zuli, doing it the easy way, and I am the Hollywood It Guy, I guess. HollywoodItGuy.com. Check it out, HollywoodItGuy.com. So we have a really awesome show for you guys today, man. Oh, I'm excited. Let's get hype. Oh, baby! Today is going to be the show of all shows. It's awesome. We got a real amazing film producer with a movie called The Last Dragon, if anybody remembers. Leroy! Who's the master? Showed us. If anybody remembers that movie, it was a 1980s movie, one of the biggest movies possible. Berry Gordy, actually. Berry Gordy from Motown. Motown Record. Motown Everything. Was his partner. And if you guys IMDb The Last Dragon, you'll see some really crazy stuff. So Berry Gordy was involved in that. And then we also have Richard Tyson. If anybody remembers Richard Tyson from The Kindergarten Cop with Terminator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's going to be on the show a little bit later on today. And we have Roz Taylor Jordan, I believe, going to be calling in. Roz Taylor Jordan, the casting director for America's Got Talent. I've been texting her. She's going to be talking about the cities that they're in, looking for those awesome auditions. So Roz should be coming on soon. And you know, I wanted to start out today, you guys, with the trippy trending topics, of today. And actually, I put it on my blog because this was a pretty cool story. Dan Aykroyd with Ghostbusters 3 is actually moving forward without Bill Murray. And Ghostbusters 3, the movie, there's rumors it's going to be coming out and whatnot. So let me read this to you. You can go to HollywoodItGuy.com if you want more details. But Bill Murray may have opted out of the Ghostbusters 3 for now, but that doesn't mean that the project isn't dead by any stretch. In fact, the co-star, Dan Aykroyd, told Esquire that he's in close to breathing life into the moribund supernatural comedy franchise without his fellow SNL alumni reprising his hilarious role as Dr. Peter Venkman. The reason? Not only did Aykroyd and director Ivan Reitman have a script that we like thanks to the new draft handed by the Tropic Thunder scribe Ethan Coen from a script by Lee Eisenberg and Gene Stupnitsky. What's up with these names? Wow. But the funny man said Murray doesn't necessarily hold veto power over the project anymore. So if you guys want to know more about that, you can go to HollywoodItGuy.com and kind of check that out. And this is the Easy Talk show, guys. Easy Talk. We're about to do that Easy Talk with some really cool people. And this is, you know, people helping people, people networking. I stole that from my friend with Variety Talk, people helping people. But this is Easy Talk. We make it a little bit easier on you. I open doors, and we talk to some industry people that are established. And we do some pretty cool talk, some great music, cool sound effects, fun stuff. I'm a crazy host. My Twitter, if you want to follow me, is E-R-I-C. Zuley, Ericzuley. You can follow that. And we also have Easy Way Broadcast, Easy Way Broadcast on Twitter, or Easy Way Broadcasting on Facebook. And we have a couple callers. Let's see what we got. We have a caller, 801-2360. You're on live on Easy Talk. How are you? Hello, caller, are you there? It's all right. Some people don't want to talk. It's understandable. They just want to sit back and listen. And I see one of our favorite fans, our favorite callers that always supports us. We got Victoria. Victoria, what's going on? We know you by name now.
Hi, Eric. I'm good.
Hey, you ready for the show?
Yeah, I am. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a fan.
You're having a director on there, which I'm trying to also get into acting. I know Shane acts, well, what does she do? Yeah, I act and I dance. So
Oh, you act and you dance. By the way, congratulations on your audition. How'd you do?
I did good, but like I told Shane, like they wanted money. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to audition to get an AMDA. I don't know if you heard of it. There's one. It's out there in Cali too. There's one in New York and one in California. It's a performing arts school. College.
Yeah, anybody that wants money up front, I'm gonna give you some advice. Man, not so much. The only time you ever pay any money up front, and I told you this on Shane's show as well, is when you're getting tools like your portfolio, your headshot, and your Zed cards and things like that. That's the only time you invest into yourself, but you don't invest into other people to help you. If they really like you and they want you for their agency or whatnot, they're gonna represent you and make money off of you. So definitely, that's like a pay to play type situation. Stay away from that. I just wanted to point out, guys, Victoria's awesome fan. We appreciate you. You're always supporting. I definitely appreciate that fans page.
One of your friends, he does the lacrosse. I think that's what it's called. He has a.
Oh yeah, John Namer, Larry Namer's son. What about him?
Yeah, he followed me too because he said he heard me.
Awesome. Well, that shows that the show works. We help celebrities interact with their fans. We help artists interact with their fans, and we help people interact via social media. So if people are following you from the show, I'm glad to hear that. You there? Hello? I guess we lost Victoria. All right, guys, but this is Easy Talk on Easy Way Broadcast, and we got a lot of fantastic shows coming up. We got actually a launch party today with Sarah Winchester from Real Housewives of Orange County. She's going to be launching her Sarah's Secrets show, 12-12-12, a couple days left. And if you're in Newport, the Newport Beach area, she's going to be doing her launch party today. A lot of celebrities, a bunch of cool people. I will be down there around 7 to 10 o'clock. It's going to be awesome. And the tweets are open, guys. I'm looking at my Twitter, ERICZULEY. I'm looking for your tweets. I got my phone in front of me waiting for your tweets. And, really quick, before we bring Roz Taylor Jordan on, and I'm going to give her a call and have her talk to us a little bit about Opportunity Time. Actually, let me tell you about Opportunity Time. Opportunity Time is going to be, we're going to be utilizing Rock This Magazine, Tightrope Magazine, Ambiance Magazine, and all the relationships we have to open up opportunities for you guys, for supporting us, for listening. So we're looking for models, we're looking for artists, we're looking for directors, producers, writers, any type of content. We're looking for people, we're looking for you. And these issues are printed issues, digital issues, they're out there, and I'm the Hollywood It guy. I'm connected to a lot of people. I have a section on Tightrope Magazine. In fact, Roz Taylor Jordan's calling me right now. Miss Roz, how you doing? You're live on air on my cell phone. How are you?
Dude, and I'm calling you from the landline on the other phone. You're the hardest man in Hollywood because you're so busy.
Well, tell me the last four digits so I can answer. So are you calling into the show? Are you in the...
I'm calling into the show. 9133381303.
I don't have you. It's 914-338-1303. Call in one more time and tell me what number you're calling from so I can pick you up, because I know my listeners and I want to talk to you.
1273. It's dialing you now.
Gotcha. Perfect. All right, bye. You guys, that was Roz Taylor Jordan. She's the supervising casting director for America's Got Talent, and they're going to tell you the opportunities for you as an artist, as a dancer, as a magician, as whatever you may want to be. Easy Talk's trying to help make your dreams come true, and we are trying to get Roz on, waiting for her to call in here. But yeah, America's Got Talent. You know, Nick Cannon is actually the host. Kelly Osbourne, the Osbourne lady, is the one of the judges. I want to make sure I'm saying it right. And then we have Howard Stern, and you guys know the show. Come on now, this is America's Got Talent, and we are now going to be working with Roz. She's going to be coming on all of our shows, actually, and she's going to be. We need some music here. She's going to be. I'm going to call her on her cell phone. That way, we can just get her on the show here and make it simple. She is going to actually be talking to all of my listeners and giving you guys the inside, the opportunity.
Still ringing.
All right, well, I got you on cell phone. We'll just make this simple. So you're on, we got Opportunity Time, guys. I'm going to go ahead and give the floor to Roz Taylor Jordan. Tell us what's going on with America's Got Talent and how can we make some dreams come true.
Dude, Easy, I'm about to hook up every single listener that you have today, and I might get in big trouble for this, but because you and I know how this works, we want to get them to my show the easy way. So I want every one of your listeners to retweet what you're going to send them. And if they do, we will give them front-of-the-line passes to any city on our live bus tour, from Birmingham, Savannah, Nashville. We're going all through that area. And anybody who goes to AGTAuditions.com, looks at the cities for our bus tour, gets your tweets and retweets that to us, can get a front-of-the-line pass.
There we go. And that, and the Twitter is AGT_auditions, correct?
It's @AGT_auditions. And then I want them to say, do it the easy way. And then put the city that they want to go to, whatever that city is.
You know, guys, if you're listening, do the hashtag, the number sign, the letter E, letter Z, the easy way. And whatever city, and you know, the easy way, and America's Got Talent got you back. And we were looking for that talent. I've been putting it out there too, man. All of our listeners, all my supporters, you know, if you guys got talent, you know, you now have the Easy Way Broadcasting and Roz Taylor Jordan, the supervising director the supervising casting director for America's Got Talent. We're looking for you guys. So you know, and we have a lot of cool stuff that me and Roz have been talking about, and it's pretty awesome. So
I got another one too.
Oh, please let us know. I'm shutting up now.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I just wanted to let them know we're going to be in Birmingham on December 10th, Memphis December 11th, Nashville December 13th, Savannah December 14th, Raleigh December 15th, and Norfolk December 16th. And then the other thing that I just got hot off the presses literally about an hour ago is that if you're in the L.A. area and you're a real estate agent, I need you. If you've got style, if you're hot, if you sell those big properties, if you think you could take on the millionaire listing guys, I'm looking for women of color, women of substance, women of character to participate in a brand new show that we're about to launch. Anybody who's interested and they live in the L.A. area, I need them to email me directly at Roz, R-O-Z, agtcasting@gmail.com, and then I will hook them up. And then one more we just got. If you are a person who knows how to jam skate, jam skaters are completely different than any other kind of skaters. They're the ones who kind of do break dancing on skates. Have you ever seen that, Easy?
Yeah, Roll Bounce is one of my movies, and that's my boy Wesley Johnson. He played the star in that movie. That's all about the skate dancing stuff. I love that stuff.
Right. Well, we are doing a show about it, and I'm looking for some more jam skaters who are anywhere in the country who have great moves that can be part of our show. So that's the same email address, rozagtcasting@gmail.com, and just put in Easy Jam. And then I'll know that you heard that, and we'll hook you up on that.
Well, there you go, guys. So if you do it the easy way, make sure that you hit up that email and you follow Easy Way Broadcast on Twitter. We'll make sure we get you that info. So if you are a talented skater and you got some skills with the dancing on skates, and you want to get your dreams to come true and be on TV and be a star, and Roz is the lady to make it happen. So make sure that you do send that email one more time, Roz.
rozagtcasting@gmail.com for the jam skaters and the real estate agents, and your Twitter page to get those front of the line passes at agtauditions.com. Pre-registered, go there and see the cities, do it the easy way, and get hooked up with front of the line passes, which I'm really excited about.
Yes,
and I love you.
Now I'm gonna introduce you, Roz, to another friend of mine before I let you go. And I know you got to get out of here, but I just want to introduce you guys real quick. You know, we always do the introductions on the show. I have a good friend of mine. His name is Richard Tyson. He is the actor, and he's very remembered by the movie Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He played with Arnold Schwarzenegger pretty much the whole movie. He's online right now on Easy Way Broadcasting. Richard, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, man?
Hey, man, thank you so much for being on the show. I want to introduce you to my friend Roz Taylor Jordan. She's a very major casting director in Hollywood. Roz Taylor Jordan, this is Richard Tyson.
Hey,
oh my gosh.
How are you?
I'm a huge fan. Richard, are you kidding me? Shut up. I'm really talking to Richard Tyson.
Hey,
yes,
that's
you are.
Very nice. You know, I've got talent.
Dude, you got a lot of talent. You're way beyond us. Hey, if you're ready to show America some of the stuff that only your family sees and only your mama laughs at, then you can come on. Or come on as a guest, you know?
They might get rid of me if I showed that kind of talent.
I know, that's what I was saying. But I said, you know, we can do that at Easy's house, and you can show me mine, I'll show you yours.
All right, Raz, well, we're going to let you go and get to Richard. Thank you so much for the opportunity time, and we really appreciate you being on the show, and we'll see you next week.
Nice
awesome.
To meet you.
Thank you so much, Easy. You too, Richard. See you soon, guys. Bye.
All right, see you. All right, guys, so we have Richard Tyson on the line. If you guys remember the movie Kindergarten Cop, one of my favorite movies, he was the dad to Dominic. And
yeah,
he played
Colin
kind Chris, of
the, you remember him. Colin Chris.
Yeah. And, you know, right. He played kind of the evil dad, the bad guy. And I know you have a lot of awesome things happening. And that was an amazing movie, man. And I appreciate you being on Easy Talk and doing it the easy way. So tell us about Richard Tyson, man. Tell us some exciting stuff that nobody knows.
Hi. You know, we're always working on movies and writing, directing, producing, all that now. You know, I used to be just an actor out there. But as you grow older in this business, you need to start producing your own stuff. When I first came to Hollywood, I was playing baseball for a living, and I realized that was a short career, you know, like 5-10 years at the most, even if you do make the majors. So I discovered acting. Blonde girl walked in a theater, and I walked in behind her, and I ended up getting the lead in this play, and I soon got on the bus with $100 from Mobile, Alabama to go be in the movies. And I realized that being an actor, I was saying at the time, like, I can be as old as I want to get. I can be 90 years old as long as I'm writing a role for myself. I can stay current. And little did I realize that it's time for that. I'm not 90, but it's great to produce and create our own stuff.
So you're getting more into producing now?
I am. No, I'm still acting. You know, I did a movie this year. It's coming out next year. It's called Demented. We were down in Puerto Rico for 5 weeks, and it was a great little movie, an independent movie. But, yeah, we're producing stuff. Right now we're putting together a movie. It's called Lord of the Casino. Travolta said he was interested, and his friend Bruce Willis said, you know, Al Pacino told me never to name drop. You know that? He himself did.
Well, yeah, I'm giving you permission to do it on my show. We love name droppers.
Okay, good. And in this business, you have to, right? I mean, who's in the movie? Well, they told me not to, but, yeah, they have to know. So we hope these guys, you know, that's a big production. We've been making little independent movies, but we're trying to break out into the big time. It would be a $50 million movie, and I wrote it, and I will direct it. Now, a question is, there's several roles that are good for major stars like Willis and Travolta, but I always write the lead role for me. I mean, isn't that all right? That's what Clint Eastwood does, it seems like. But if you get one of these other guys that wants to play your role, what do you do? Do you give Bruce Willis your lead role and you take another one and you direct and produce and write? Or do you hold on to that one?
That's a good question, man. My opinion would be, I would think you have to kind of figure out which hat you're going to wear. Because if you're going to wear your producer hat and you feel that the film may be more successful because of maybe value in overseas sales because of a certain name, or you know,
absolutely.
Looking at all the different all the different points to it.
Yeah.
You know, that's your producer hat. But at the same time, if you feel the movie's going to be a big movie and you want to excel more as an actor, you know, I personally would go the producer route because there's more money in it.
Right, right. And you could always write another one, right?
You know? Yeah, correct.
I mean, for yourself. So now you're in the big time, you can do it. Well, I understand that, but I've taken a poll, and it's about 50-50. Are you kidding me? You're going to give him your role? It's like I do have some great roles for him, and I'll push it. Oh, I'm going to... I'll put it to him, you know. I wrote one particularly for John Travolta. You know, he plays all these spiritual characters. You know, that Angel movie he did, with the wings and stuff. Remember that?
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but, he's
done so many movies.
Yeah, that's right, he is. I did a movie with him, Battlefield Earth. We already found that four people saw it, but... Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, I actually do, man. I'm a fan of yours, bro. I remember from Kindergarten Cop, and then I watched a couple of the other movies. You're a very good actor. I know that you're actually going to be coming in, and you're involved in one of our projects, The Jack Story, and that's coming along very well. And you know about cockroaches and, you know, a couple of the films that we're involved in. So, yeah, guys, you are listening right now to two industry people that are kind of making some projects happen. Now, before I want to introduce you to somebody as well. He's actually on the line waiting to come in. He's our next guest. His name is Rupert Hitzig, and we have a really cool intro we're going to be putting on for him, guys, and he is a very major film producer. We're very blessed to have him on, and I want to introduce you to him, Richard. You guys both have R's in your name, and it's meant to be, right? But before I bring him in, I want to ask you this. You being an actor, what advice do you have for our listeners that want to be actors? And please don't say, oh, be ambitious and work hard. You know, be a little detailed. And you, as an experienced actor and working with the people you work with, and, you know, you did give us a little advice, be a producer as well as an actor. But let's say the actors, that their passion is to be an actor and do auditions and get an agent and all that stuff. What advice, you know, in maybe 2 minutes or less, would you have for those actors listening to us right now?
Well, it's interesting. I've been teaching seminars across the South because the business has really flourished down there. One thing I would say is I got on the bus with $100 to come be in the movies in Hollywood. You don't have to do that anymore. There's technology in your neighborhood, and you can create and start. I say pick up a camera and start filming stuff. You know, as far as learning how to act and doing that, it's about reading. It's about repetition, you know, and it's about being ready, you know, when they call on you. You know, it's like I got a call. I was playing Petruchio in Taming of the Shrew in Shakespeare's play. They call me the morning of opening night and said, look, Ridley Scott wants you in Morocco for Black Hawk Down. You need to leave this afternoon. I said, it's opening night. They said, well, you need to go. And the unwritten rule is you leave a theater production to go do a movie. So I'm acting, you know, constantly when I'm not in a movie. And I'm staying in shape. So, you know, when they called, I was ready and I was in shape to play a Delta Force man in Morocco in Black Hawk Down. So, I mean, it's a daily routine. It's almost like life. I mean, when you read about acting and what you should do, it's about calming yourself. It's about always reading and finding something else to work on. There's a little, my friend, a producer, walks around. We meet actors in L.A., and he says, are you an actor? Yeah, we're an actor. Says, do you have your lines on you? Says, well, I'm not working on anything right now. Oh, you're not? You're not rich. You got any lines in your pocket? And I always pull out my lines that I'm working on, whether it's a job or maybe it's a personal interest or something, but I always have that thing in my back pocket that when I'm sitting at a cafe waiting on a meeting or something, I always have that, you know, and through osmosis, really, you're able to keep sharp and keep going, you know. So it's a 24-hour deal, you know, if you're acting and you're serious about it.
Well, thank you for that advice, Richard. We really appreciate it, and it is really great advice. And so hold on 1 second. I want to keep you on the line, so I'll make sure I introduce you to our other guest, then we'll let you go. And we're actually going to be bringing you on again, so we have a little bit more time with you. I know that you're breaking yourself away from, I believe you're shooting something now, or you're probably on set, and I know you're busy. But give me 1 second.
Absolutely.
I'm going to let everybody know that you listen to Easy Way Broadcasting. I'm your host, EZ. You can follow me on Twitter at ERICZULEY, Easy Way Broadcast on Twitter. And next up, we have a really special guest. I don't know if you guys remember, but this was the gentleman that created and produced and worked with Berry Gordy from Motown from the film The Last Dragon, one of my favorite films. And he's actually on the line with us, and we're going to be bringing in Mr. Rupert Hitzig.
Easy Way Broadcasting is pleased to have as our guest a man who does it all in Hollywood. He is a writer, producer, and director of film and television. Whether he is swimming with sharks in 3D or finding the last dragon, our guest is on a journey doing Hollywood his way. Easy Talk is thrilled to take you into the world of Rupert Hitzig.
Hey, Rupert, are you there?
Easy Way. I love that opening.
Thank you.
I want a copy of it.
I have to thank my producer Tina Truman for helping out with that. And I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. His name, you've probably been listening to the show. He's a very established actor. His name's Richard Tyson. Richard, this is Rupert. You guys, the R twins. Rupert, meet Richard.
Hey,
Richard, meet Rupert.
Richard.
Hey,
Richard,
Rupert,
I want to hear what lines have you got in your pocket?
Oh, you want to hear? Okay. Well, we're doing a movie up in Sacramento. I'm about to fly out, actually. We're shooting a bit this weekend. I play a guy with a plate in my head from Vietnam, and I'm growing older. I'm painting my hair white, and I'm playing Benny, and he's in the inner city. And there's a girl next door who's being abused by her parents or step-parents, and they're doing it
just
for the
money.
Don't
give me the backstory. Give me the line.
Teresa, where are you? Teresa, look, it's Benny. It's Benny. Well, that's one of them, you know. I mean,
that's
do you want
good.
More?
That's good. That's repetition. Yeah. I can tell you've done that 1,000 times.
Well, I tell you what, you know, the hardest thing is connecting with a plate, the plate in the head, you know. That could give you... You know, paralysis, it could give you Parkinson's, I don't know what it could give you. I'm not sure where I am right now on that, but we'll get it
well,
by the end.
Well, good to meet you,
week.
And I always admire actors that are working.
Thank you, brother, thank you.
Right.
Hey, Richard, so thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to be glad to have you back. I'm going to go ahead and go to our next guest here now. And you guys, this is Richard Tyson. He is an actor, and how do people get at you, Richard? How can people get in touch with you? Do you have any social media or anything that...
Well, TysonDCProductions.com. You can go there. D.C., like Washington, D.C. You know, check us out. You can email us. It shows you how to stay in touch. So please, TysonDCProductions.com.
Good luck, Richard.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
a lot. All right.
All right, guys, so that was Richard Tyson, and now we're with Rupert Hitzig, my special guest today. You guys have seen it being promoted all over the place, and people are calling me, and you got fans calling my cell phone. How'd they get my number, Rupert? Did you give people my number?
Well, you know social media. You know what it does. I put that ad out on Facebook, and I got a response from somebody that went to Harvard with me in my undergraduate days and says, finally, I know a legend. Now I can die in peace. Because you did call me a legendary producer.
Well, and you are a legendary producer. I mean, I'm a big, big fan about the movie that you and Barry produced, The Last Dragon. And when I met you through Rick Rosman, which is one of my clients, and going to be doing a show, actually, you guys, on Sunday at 4 o'clock. This Sunday, his show launches. It's a financial and charity-based show, financial advice. And make sure you tune into that. Tune into Easy Way Broadcast.
Richard is a pistol. I mean, you can't keep up with Richard. He's a guy who climbs 52 stories for cystic fibrosis, and the next day he's down doing a 26-mile marathon. He is an energizer bunny without the lead.
Yeah, we're turning him into a motivational speaker, and, you know, we're in the midst of getting him a possible television show. And, I mean, they just got to listen to the show. They'll know who Richard is, and you can go to his blog, Rick Rosman, R-O-Z-M-A-N. .com, and you know more about that.
Great.
But this show is about you, you Rupert. You know, I'm very... very excited to ask you all the stuff I have to ask you. And I mean, first and foremost, man, I mean, talk to us about the movie that you're really known for. I mean, there's so much to go into, but just give us your perception of the movie and the behind the scenes and what goes on in a producer's mindset in creating such a established and successful movie like The Last Dragon.
Well, I must tell you, The Last Dragon is an icon. There isn't an African-American between 8 to 80 that doesn't know that movie, and some of them say they've seen it 20, 30 times. If I meet someone in the street that looks in his 20s or 30s or 40s and I say, who's the meanest of us all? And he says, show enough, and they look, wrinkle their brow and say, why'd you say that? I said, well, because I produced that. And he said, you produced The Last Dragon? Come here, brother, and gives me a big hug. It happened last night. I went to the bungalow down in Santa Monica, and the bouncer out in front was telling me that I couldn't go to this private party. And I said, who's the meanest of us all? Show enough. And he says, why are you saying that? I said, I produced it. He says, come on in. You're at the front of the line. So, I mean, people remember the movie, remember that movie. I have 1,000 stories of times when just talking about The Last Dragon got me out of trouble with anything that might have happened and gone wrong. It's amazing how it has staying power among all generations.
So tell us about the creation process of how something like that gets created.
Well, it started with a guy named Louis Finasta, who was the writer, and then Michael Schultz, who was the director, and I was the second unit director and producer, and we all worked for Berry Gordy, who, as you well know, is meticulous to a point of fanaticism in terms of every detail. So he pushes everybody very, very hard and has a certain amount of control, but also lets you go creatively into your direction. For example, the last two reels of the movie, when Leroy finds out that the master's inside of himself, we had another karate fight, and it was just, to me, just another normal karate fight. And I talked with Michael, and we decided to do something, even though Barry said, don't spend the money, it's not right for this movie. We took it to my friend Rob Blaylock at Praxis, who had done all my special effects for Wolfen, and said, we want 35 shots so that every time Leroy makes a hit with his fist, now that he's found out that he's the master, sparks fly and the room lights up, and we add another big dimensional score to it. And it took the 11th and 12th reel of that movie and put it into the stratosphere. When I showed it to Berry Gordy, Michael and I sat there and we wondered what he'd think, because he had said, absolutely not, we don't want any special effects in this movie. Showed it to him, he turned with a big grin on his face and he says, that's terrific, that's fantastic. And it was a very, very important moment for me, because I'd taken a chance with about $155,000 worth of special effects.
Wow.
And in fact, I think it made the end of the movie very important. And the same thing happened basically on the DeBarge song, In the Rhythm of the Night, which was our song. And I had done a number of movies that decade, and we use a Walla group for everything we do. You know, if you film a party scene and you have principals in the front, you tell everybody in the back to mime the words so that there's no soundtrack. And then afterwards in post, you take it in and you put party sounds behind it. And it was one day that we were sitting there listening to the first recording attempt by DeBarge, and In the Rhythm of the Night, when I said to him, I said, did you ever use Walla in a song? And he said, what is Walla? And I said, Walla is the sound of voices at the party. It's all about a party. It's all night. And we added those voices, and that became kind of a standard. If you remember that after that, he did a Lionel Richie recording, All Night Long, and you hear the voices in the background. Well, those are the first two songs that I know that used a Walla group to give a party atmosphere to a song while it was being done.
Wow. Man, and I bet you have so much. I mean, we don't have enough time to talk to you and me ask the questions that I really want to get in. I want to give the fans a chance to meet you and ask some questions as well. We have a caller 503-4132. If your last digits of your number is 4132, you're on Easy Talk. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine.
Caller? Hi, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Chips, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
My
Chips,
Lord,
Portland, all right, love Oregon.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hitzig a question. Is it really true that he hung out with Ernest Hemingway in Pamplona?
You got it, Mr. Chips. I have a picture to prove it. I was there with a couple of friends from Harvard. We were going through our summer vacation, and it was a kind of coming of age. And we saw Ernest Hemingway, and we went over to him and asked him how we could run the Bulls, and he said, why don't we have a little glass of wine? And we sat down at a table, and he said, don't go out there tomorrow, watch how they fall. Don't go out the next day, watch how they fall. And what about the third day? Because that's Friday, that's when we got to leave. He says, now you know how they're going to fall, you can go out and run the Bulls. I was with two great guys, one named John Spooner and one named Janger, and I'll never forget Janger. I lost touch with him for a while, but, man, that guy could run the Bulls.
You bet. Could run the Bulls. Well, this is very, very exciting, I'll tell you. It's really interesting to be up here in Portland and hear you interviewing one of the legends in Hollywood. So I'm really enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying the show.
Well, I love hearing
follow
from my fans.
Great.
Please make sure you follow Easy Way Broadcast, and also tell them your Twitter, Rupert, because we're a very social media driven show, and we love watching the fans interact with their favorite
Rupert
celebrities.
At Rupert.Hitzig.
Yeah, I'm down.
Hang in there. I'm coming down to Portland. Matter of fact, maybe I'll see some of my friends.
You better see your friends when you come to Portland. Love you guys.
Okay,
thanks so much for listening. Okay.
Hey.
So guys, that was one of the. Yeah, you got some fans, Rupert. You got some fans, man. So
nice.
Let's talk about The Last Dragon 2. Okay, is there going to be a possible Last Dragon 2? Can you give us some details?
No, there was
going to
be a Last Dragon 2. I got a call from the president of TriStar to come in and talk about a project after I finished with Motown. And I went into a meeting. I had no idea what it was about. And he says, we'd like you to direct The Last Dragon 2. And we have to limit the budget to $8 million. Well, for me, $8 million was a tremendous amount of money. And I said, I can do it. Unfortunately, I didn't know why I was going into the meeting, but I didn't clear it with the big boss in the sky, Mr. Barry Gordy. And Barry Gordy called me one day, a couple of days later, and he says, did you go to that meeting and talk about doing Last Dragon 2? I said, yeah, Jeff Sagansky asked me to come up and talk about it. He said, well, you were in the room, weren't you? I said, yes, I was. He said, that's good enough for me. So there's not going to be no Last Dragon, and you're not going to direct it. I was going to give you that. Now I can't give you that. So Last Dragon 2 went down the drain, and that one mistake that I made by not calling him and saying, hey, I'm going up to talk about this movie. And I know that's how Barry works. He's a wonderful guy, but if you get into trouble with him, that's the end of the relationship. And that ended a very, very warm and terrific relationship some 20 years ago.
Oh, I'm going to cry, man.
I wanted to direct the picture. But
Every fan of The Last Dragon is crying right now. I can hear the tears.
Well, maybe
dropping.
I can revive it now because of this interview. I can call Barry and say, look, it's been 20 years. It's time to make The Last Dragon 2 come to life.
Well, let me tell you something. You get him on my show, and we'll talk to him, and we'll convince him live. I have access to 100 blogs and tons of newspapers and magazines. You tell me what I have to do to make that happen. And you and I will make that happen. You have to do
Last
Dragon 2.
You make that happen, make the happiest day of my life. I've got the story. I wanted to do Last Dragon 2, and it was just a shame that we ran into that kind of a complication. And I still love the man. In fact, I went to the studio and recorded a rap song and sent it to him to try to bridge the gap. It went, Mr. Chairman, please pick up the phone. I'm sitting down in Market Street and feeling all alone. I went to see Sagansky. That part is true, but I sure as heck didn't mean to bypass you. I was looking for the sequel. And I sent it to him, and he called me one more time. He says, you got more rhythm than my writer, Norman Whitfield, but it's still not going to do any good. There's going to be no Last Dragon 2. So let's see if we can open it up.
Let's see what we can do. I had to give you a beat in the background there. I don't know if you guys could hear it, but you wear a bunch of hats like I do, man. I love it. So
yeah.
I know that you have a Western type of theme. You're big into Western. That's why we threw the Western behind the scenes kind of Western themed music to you. And I know you have some stuff that you want to talk about with. You love Westerns, and you have some plans to make a Western or something like that. But before we get into that, I want to give a couple of callers a chance to meet you as well. We have a caller, 801-2360. You're on live on Easy Talk with Rupert and Eric Zulli. Are you there, caller? Hello?
Yes. Hi, this is Kathy Tidwell. Hi, Rupert.
Hello, Kathy Tidwell.
Just wanted to know what you have on the horizon.
Kathy Tidwell, you know that I'm going to do that movie in Ogden, Utah. I have a movie, Eric, called Stuff It. And Stuff It is a little black comedy for teenagers about control. It's about a kid who stuffs his father when he dies, and then he has control. He can turn him on, he can turn him off. And then he puts the whole town to sleep because they picked on him when he was a computer geek and not a quarterback. So we've done the sizzle reel.
You want me to be the computer geek, right?
You could be. You'd be great. I told you the other day when I met you, I said you'd be great in the movies, like an evangelist preacher or a computer geek. I got a part for you. All we got to do is get it done.
See, anybody that's listening right now, I know this is like a too good to be true type of thing, but believe it or not, when you do meet people and you do network with them, if your first impression is correct and you're really genuine. I mean, I met you, Rupert. We shook each other's hands. I mean, we did meet each other through a mutual friend and client. So it was a great situation. But I really appreciate that you appreciate my look. So let me ask you this: what was it about me that makes you even want to remotely? I mean, that's a big opportunity, and I've got tears. I got to move my tear from my cheek here. What is it that makes you want to maybe work with me? Like the first impression, like let's talk a little bit about that introduction.
I'll tell you, first of all, physically, you're completely unique. Secondly, and I think unique in a very good way. I mean, I can see you in a period. I can see you in an old Western. I can see you in this little picture that I'm doing. you have a quality that emanates a kind of a radiance when people meet you. They see you, that you stand out, and you've got a charisma about it. And the charisma is the only thing that gets through the screen. I mean, you can't fake it. You know, you can go to all the acting classes you want. If you don't really have it, you don't make it. And I think you have it. So let's find the right role, and let's get the financing, and let's make a movie.
I love it. Wow. So you would say that it's really based upon look for the actor, and
no,
they can go to
No, it's not
classes.
Based on look. You're not okay. Gregory Peck. You know, it's not based on the looks at all. It's based on the character of the look. It's based on the fire behind the eyes. It's based on the charisma that comes off the soul about the lively. You're just lively. You're connect with everybody in the room. They notice you. They knew. So if you had a message, your message would cut through the screen and it would work. You've got to find the right part.
And I don't want to be rude to our caller. We still have Kathy there. Kathy, do you have any other questions for our wonderful guests? Are you enjoying the show?
I'm enjoying this show. And I just want to say that what drew me to Rupert years ago was his charisma. I think he's so positive and upbeat, and he's going to do a great job moving forward.
Thanks. I'll see you in Ogden. That's my favorite spot for making a movie.
Awesome.
All right, thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling in. And we have one more caller, 302-4331. 302-4331. You're on live, Easy Talk with Rupert and Eric Zulli. You there, caller?
Eric, hi. This is Sam Beard calling.
Oh, wow. What a treat.
Talk about charisma.
I've largely lost my voice. I have a cold in my throat, but I think it'll be just fine.
Well, let me tell my listeners real quick who we have on the line here.
He sounds like Humphrey Bogart.
Talk about movies, and I sound like Gabby Hayes.
No, Humphrey Bogart.
You guys, this is the man with the Jefferson Awards. Just look up Sam B E A R D. Like, there's no, I can't even talk enough about this man. And this is also Rupert's partner. And I'm so blessed right now to have both of you guys on my show. My show, I just saw like a halo go above my studio right now because you guys are both on my show. Sam, since we have you, tell us really quick a little bit about your foundation and you know who you are, and so my listeners might want to get involved and maybe help.
Well, I've had the privilege of my whole life has been public service, and I started in Bedford-Stuyvesant with Senator Robert Kennedy. And after the senator's assassination, I started a nonprofit called the National Development Council, and we worked on creating jobs in inner cities. And I had the fun of doing that with four United States presidents, and we created well over 2 million jobs in inner cities. And then because I worked with Bobby Kennedy, Jackie Kennedy was always very nice to me. And she made a mistake at a cocktail party and said, Sam, you're always full of energy. What are you thinking about? And I said, I think there should be a Nobel Prize for public service. And she went on and on about it. So I called her the next morning. I said, if you agree to chair this, I'll set it up. And she said yes. And so we created the Jefferson Awards. And for many years, we gave them out in the United States Supreme Court. We have 150 television stations and newspapers that work with us all across the country about grassroots unsung heroes. And then 5 years ago, we used the history and prestige of the Jefferson Awards and started going into high schools. And we've now trained 7,000 high school student leaders to drive a monthly process in 350 high schools, which has led to 5.2 million hours of volunteering. And we had a wonderful event in Los Angeles, and that's where I had the privilege of meeting you, Eric. And one of the highlights of that evening was meeting your dad. And he talked about, he always cared about kids who were in disadvantaged communities, and he would become their mentor one-on-one. And he would try to show them that life was possible and that there were bigger horizons. And he made it his business to introduce these inner-city kids that he was mentoring and brought them to top, like, Los Angeles pitchers like Don Sutton and others. So Eric, you're the acorn falling off of a great tree.
Oh, thank you so much. That's an honor coming from you, Sam. And yeah, my dad is, he's done so much for kids, and you know, he had cancer, and he's okay now, and he wants to talk about motivational speaking as far as, you know, having positive thinking when you have. I mean, there's so much we're going to talk about, and I'm you know, honored that you even called into the show, and you know, I'm looking forward to doing some really great things with you guys the easy way. And so before
Eric, let me clarify one thing. You gave me it's like calling a lieutenant a general. You said that I was one of Sam's partners. I'm only a guy who works in the media part division of what he's done. He's done this for 40 years. I've been with Sam for the last 2 years because we started something called GlobeChangers.org, which is for kids between 14 and 24 that want to change the world. That's my contribution. I couldn't even claim to be a partner of Sam's. He's been doing this for far too long and far too well without having any new partners. So just going to clarify, you're using the word partner.
Oh, my apologies. But you guys do work
not
together, so semi-right. but Sam, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to talking with you later on in the week and seeing how I can help raise awareness and being involved in your wonderful organization. And thank you so much for the wonderful words that you said about me. And it was an honor meeting you guys. And I also want to say thank you to Rick Rosman, which is one of our hosts, and we'll be doing a show on Sunday for the reason that we're all on the phone today. And it's all about thanking that middleman. Because, you know, that's a lot of times how things happen, is middleman situation. So, now, real quick before we let you go, Sam, how do people get in touch with you guys if they want to support and they want to help?
If they want to support, they can use my email, s.beard, B-E-A-R-D, at jeffersonawards.org, or call my cell phone, 302.
No! You never want to do that. We'll make
call the office.
You never, yeah, you never want to give your direct information on live like this.
Okay, call the office number 302-295-0525.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling into the show, Sam. I'm looking forward to working with you.
See you soon, Sam. Thanks for calling in.
Adios. Thank you much.
Okay. Now, we're back with River. I apologize, you know, to take your time, but that was Sam, and, you know, we want to make sure that everybody knows
no
who
problem.
Sam is and what a wonderful individual. So let's talk about you, man. Let's talk about the Western. Tell us about this Western that you're developing. What's going on?
When I was 14 years old, we had a house in Woodstock, New York, and we had a riding ring. And one day when I was 13, I said to my sister, how many times you go around that circle? Couldn't you straighten out the line? And she had a friend there from the University of Texas who was a freshman. And the woman said we could probably ride across the country in one summer. So I was 13. I said, you mean next summer? I said, yeah. I said, I'll do it. So we rode across the country on a horse at the age of 14 for 109 days and nights and got to Woodstock, New York on October 3rd. That started my kind of quest for Westerns. And when I became a filmmaker, I said, I definitely want to do a Western. And my first one was taken from a picture that was in a Time Life book called Women of the West, called Catalanian Little Britches. And it started with a photograph, and then 2 years later, I was in the middle of Mexico, and Burt Lancaster, Rod Steiger, Diane Lane, Amanda Plummer, John Savage, Scott Glenn, all came off a plane dressed in old Western clothes, and we made a great, great picture called Catalanian Little Britches. Then I directed another picture, a Western, with Mickey Rooney and Ben Johnson's last picture, and Randy Gatlin and Ernest Borgnine and Ned Beatty and Gloria DeHaven, called Outlaws, The Legend of O.B. Taggart in Santa Fe, and I had a ball. So now it's about a few pictures later, and I want to do a Western, but I want to do a Western with Hispanic overtones. I found stories in the 1850s during the Gold Rush, in which Spanish Mexicans who were coming back to claim the land they'd grown up on were discriminated against, and I want to create a Hispanic hero, a hero that can give the Hispanics who are having such a hard time these days someone to look up for, to kind of a protector. So we're developing a picture, and I'm on my way to El Paso in the next couple of weeks to hopefully raise the financing for the first stage. It's
wow,
called.
So do you think if anybody's listening or anybody's following or getting involved or you know, involved with the show, that you might be looking for casting opportunities or any possible opportunities with your projects?
Definitely. I'm looking for Hispanic actors for sure, but of course there are gringos in it too. But people that love Westerns. Now, I want to tell you, Eric, that I'm going to invite you. Every second Wednesday, every alternating Wednesday, we meet at the Saddle Ranch Chop House, a bunch of people who love Western films. It's been organized by a friend of mine named Rob Word. But at that table, all wearing cowboy boots, there are between 50 and 70 Western heroes, Western actors, including the oldest, who is Arthur Gardner, who is 103 years old or 102 years old, who produced the original Rifleman, all the way down to Jesse Cove, the sensei's son, who's now making his own film. So he's in his early 20s. But we all talk about Westerns, and we all wear cowboy hats, and anybody can come by that wants to meet anybody from Bruce Boxleitner, Marty Cove, the sensei from Karate Kid, Bo Hopkins from the original Magnificent Seven, Bob Forster, Robert Forster. They're all there. There are people who supply guns and stuntmen and set designers, and we all sit and we kind of mourn the fact that the Western is not being made anymore as much as it was in this country, because it's an American part of American lore. So we do meet once every 2 weeks, and Eric, I want you to come to the next one. It's going to be our Christmas party.
Thank you.
Next
Wednesday. I will do everything in my power to arrange my schedule to do that. I'm honored that you're inviting me. And we do have another caller too. I want to make sure that all the callers get a chance to talk to the great Rupert and me. If you want to talk to little old me, we got 408-0452. You're on Easy Talk. How are you? You there?
Eric, this is Rich Greenwood, and I'm so honored to be talking to you today. And wow, what a fantastic show you put on today. And Rupert, I've watched your work for many, many years. And one of the things that you know, that I don't know if anybody that's listening has a good grasp of this, is you seem to, in your history, deal with archetypes, which is a wonderful thing, because by dealing with archetypes, you can tell those kinds of big stories, like you're talking about with the Western that you're putting on and the Last Dragon and stories like that, because those kinds of stories transcend times. And so I just wanted to say God bless you for doing that.
Well, I love your saying that. Thank you very much. Yeah, we look at right now we're doing a film called April Ashley Project. It doesn't have a real name, except it might be called Extraordinary. And it's about an extraordinary woman who was a man when he was born, a little boy, and became the first transgender in England, but was a top model for Vogue in Paris in 1960 and 61, and then was outed. By that time, she was a woman, and she was outed by a jealous model, and her life went down the drain. But Queen Elizabeth, on December 10th, 2 days from now, 3 days from now, is giving her, at the age of 76, the MBE award for a contribution to transgender rights. And we have the story, and we're just about to make the deal to make it into a film. There's a larger-than-life icon.
You bet. And, it, you know, talking about, transcending, I mean, it's part of the name, right? And I wonder what the Walesky brothers would think of that, you know, now that one of them has been sexually redefined who they are.
Well, we even thought about asking them to direct it, but we're going to keep it in-house at this point. But it's going to be wonderful. We hope to make it a theatrical feature on the same scope as King's Speech. And then we're going to do the documentary, because she's still vital, and we want to go back to all the haunts, Morocco, Paris, London, all the places that she hung out. But she's an amazing woman, and I hope to see this project come to fruition.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, you talked about the Western you're putting on, and, you know, not that I want to advocate to be in a picture, but I was in 1980. I wrote a mechanical bull on Japanese TV. It was on a show called The Corn. So if you need somebody to write a bull for you, I'd be happy to do that.
Well, there's a challenge. Why don't you come by next Wednesday, introduce yourself at that luncheon, not this next Wednesday, the Wednesday after, and the bull is at the Saddle Ranch Chop House. And if you get on and you stay through to the end, I'll buy you a drink.
There you go.
A match was just done the easy way. Thank you so much, Richard, for calling in. We will follow us on Easy Way Broadcast, and we appreciate you listening to the show, and appreciate your wonderful feedback.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So, Rupert, we are back, and I'm having a blast, man. I really am. You have a very interesting life. Now, here's my question to you. Someone, you know, of your experience, and obviously you're a very experienced producer, how did you get started in the business? You know, can you cover, like, the stepping stones of who you met and what gave you your opportunities and, like, wherever you want to start from when you're a kid?
I started way before then. My father was a driven doctor. My mother was a very poetic woman, and she was very arts-oriented. And at the age of 5, she started me on the violin. I went to drama school at the age of 7. I was the youngest king of the 3 kings at the Carnegie Hall when I was 7 with the Philharmonic behind me. I went to ballet school called King Coit, and then I took riding lessons, and then I played the violin more. I was the concertmaster of the Youth Orchestra of New York, and then I went away to school, and I buried my violin because I wanted to be one of the boys. My senior year, they had an emergency. The first violinist got the flu, and I had to come out of the closet and play the violin. And all the guys from the football team came, and they were yelling, "Roop, roop, roop," as I walked down the library hall with my violin. And I realized that I was stupid, that I'd put aside a violin when I could have flaunted it. From there, when I went to Harvard, I became involved in the Dunster Drama Workshop, the HDC, which is the Harvard Dramatic Club, and I was the president and star of the Hasty Pudding Show. So that's the only legitimate place you can put on a dress and not be gay. So I played the part of Patricia, a 19-year-old nymphomaniac, and sang about 3 or 4 songs. And just recreated that the other day with John Lithgow for scholarships out here at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. I played a much older 19-year-old nymphomaniac. So that started me in the path. And then right from college, I went to work at... before I even went to the graduation, I was hired at to stage musicals at the Framingham Music Tent, and I worked with Ginger Rogers and put her in the company of Annie Get Your Gun, Tony Perkins and Damn Yankees, Tony Martin and Alan King and Guys and Dolls and Howard Keel and Carousel, and I just had a ball. I was living with the dancer Donna McKechnie, and I was 22 years old. And that just got me into the wonderful world of show business, and I've never stopped. And there I am. That was the beginning. I just went from that to New York and started working in television and went around the world with the Joffrey Ballet. Then I went in the Marine Corps, and then I came back and I got a job at CBS. And then that led to my first feature, which was when I was still in my 20s, Electric Light in Blue. And I've been doing it ever since.
Wow, you gotta love Hollywood. And you guys listen to Easy Way Broadcasting. I'm Easy, doing it the easy way, making it a little easier on you. We have another caller as well, 310-4554, 310-4554. You're on Easy Talk. How are you?
I'm fine. It's Jerry Hutchinson, president of the Multicultural Motion Picture Association. I certainly enjoyed hearing the information and just how his career took off. It's been very exciting and very good to hear all this stuff.
Well, hello, Jarvie. You guys, let me just introduce real quick. There's a friend of mine, and I'm actually on the board of that organization. And this is actually the gentleman that gave me my award, my first award, which was presented to me by the director of the Golden Globes and Spirit Awards, and then turned into the Easy Achievement Award, which was actually a category of the MMPA, signed off by the City and County of Los Angeles and council members, and then that grew into the congressionally recognized stage. So Jarvie is actually one of the men that actually gave me my first opportunity with the award.
Wonderful.
Situation. Blessed that you're calling in, Jarvie, and I know you have a toy drive coming up. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the toy drive and anybody that might want to support and get involved?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, we have the 13th annual Hollywood Holiday Celebrity Toy Drive Extravaganza being held on next Thursday, December the 13th, from 6:30 to 10 p.m. And it's going to be held at the Auto Gallery at 9022 Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills. And we're collecting toys for kids that are in group homes that are in the system of the Los Angeles County public system, and we're making a better way for the kids as well as for the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. So we have a lot going that we're doing in the entertainment industry for kids, and that's what it's all about during the holiday season. And we wanted to invite those that are listening to come out and support the 13th annual Toy Drive.
Definitely. And you guys can follow, is it the Multicultural Motion Picture Association on Facebook so they can get more information?
Yes, they could go to the organization on Facebook, or either they could contact our office at area code 310-358-3000. 8300.
Cool. Well, if anybody wants to support, I strongly suggest I will be there. If you want to come hang out and do it the easy way, I'll be there to support. And Jarvi, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it, and thank you for everything that you've done with the whole Easy Way movement.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care now.
Take care. All right, good, guys. So, Rupert, I have so many questions for you, but we have so many callers. You have so many fans, man. I think we should grab one more caller. 402-602-6620. You're on the line on Easy Talk, Easy Way Broadcasting. Are you there, caller? Hello? Caller?
Hello,
caller. Where are you calling from? What's your name?
This is Rock News Magazine calling in.
Oh, Rock News Magazine, right on. Well, Easy Talk, we're with Rupert, big time, huge, major film producer, telling me he's going to put me in a big film and change my life. And Rock News Magazine, meet Rupert Hitzig, the creator and producer of, the producer of The Last Dragon, which is one of my favorite movies of all time in the 1980s. And have you been listening to the show?
No, actually, I was trying to get into the show, but my computer wouldn't cooperate.
No problem. Well, do you have any questions for Rupert?
Well, actually, I just want to call in and let everybody know that Rock News Magazine is doing it the easy way.
Oh, right on, right on. I love the name, Rock This Magazine, and Rock This Magazine rocks. So how do people follow you? How do people get in touch with you?
People can follow me on Twitter at Rock This Magazine with no E, or they can go to our Facebook page. At Facebook, Rock This Magazine does have the E. That's the only way you guys can follow us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling to the show and supporting. Appreciate it.
Hey, and good luck to you guys, okay?
All right, good luck. All right, so we are going to go back to Rupert here. Man, we got a lot of callers that are listening to you, man. You got magazines calling in. You got presidents of the Multicultural Motion Picture Association. You got fans. You got so much stuff. 2013 is going to be a great year, man. I'm excited. So, Rupert, tell us a little bit about the struggles that you've incurred as a producer.
I have no struggles. I've had
no struggles at all.
No, of course. You can look at it as struggles or you can look at it as part of the process. I never get down and I never look back. I just keep going forward. Now the struggle is, there is a struggle. I'm over 50. The struggle is to convince people that you know what you're doing when your cells are turned a little bit gray, and that you now know, one of the things I like to say about my career, because there's a lot of skill involved with all the different areas that I've been in, is that finally I know what I'm doing. And now it's hard to get the job. So you can't get a job when you're my age. You have to create the job. It's the same thing as a producer. The definition of a producer to me is, one, the person who makes it happen. So instead of looking for a job, I'm looking to make projects happen in which I'm tied in. Luckily, I have a wonderful partner named Ed Sanders, who's half my age and comes from England and has as much energy as I do, if not more. And Whit Haney, who is a phenomenal writer and one of the major blogsters in the country. And the three of us have put together a company called Limey Yank Productions, and I've got the support of somebody half my age who supports and pushes and protects me against the people that have age bias in this business.
Well, now you have me doing it the easy way, too.
There we go.
I got your back, and I'm young.
I mean, I'll outlast anybody on the set, and I can outthink anybody that I know, or at least match them, and I know how to construct a script and where the camera should be. And it's just a shame that this town doesn't appreciate the fact that you've got, it's like a fine wine. You get better with age.
Okay, it's the Easy Way crystal ball time. I see in our future you and me doing a project together.
I'm all for that.
You doing what you do and I do what I do. Hey, do you remember this?
Leroy!
I love it. It's one of my favorite scenes. So tell us about this scene, the glow.
Well, I'll tell you about the score. I mean, Norman Whitfield did that theme, but the primary composer on the piece, other than music videos, which were part of it, there were three music videos in the body of the film, was a man, a Jewish Israeli, named Misha Siegel, who is a fantastic composer. Now, when Barry said to me, don't worry about finding another composer, I've got the composer, his name is Misha, And because I knew that Motown was basically an African-American organization, I expected Misha to walk through the door, this 6'3" tall black guy, and in walked this kind of fair-haired Jewish writer from Israel. And Misha Siegel did a wonderful job on the score. Then Norman Whitfield came in and wrote the theme, and the other writers that did the glow, and they were freelance. Like DeBarge played, In the Rhythm of the Night, and all the rest of it.
Man, and I looked on YouTube, and this was one of the most watched at the time. Because remember, this was in the 1980s, and it grew. But if you guys study and you look on YouTube, and you type in The Last Dragon, there's so many people that have talked about this scene, this particular scene where they first realize that the glow, you see Leroy's face. I mean, the acting in that is so amazing. And I wanted to point this out, what I really love is in the music, and I don't know, was this Leroy or was this in the music, when it sounded like he was like so scared, he's like,
that was Leroy. That was Tymac. That was Tymac. Tymac was an incredible actor. I don't understand why he didn't become a major star after that, but he kind of retreated from the business. But Tymac came in for his audition, and he stood out because he was wearing a blue jumpsuit, and he had he brought in his own music, and he did a choreographed karate piece dressed in this jumpsuit, which had an American flag on the back, as I remember, was dark blue. And he just captivated us. He was just a fantastic from the beginning. He had never done anything before. And just did an interview on a film, Where Are They Now, for BET. And they did an hour special, I think, on whatever happened to Tymac. But then we also had Vanity and Julius Carey. And Vanity, who was so incredible and so beautiful, became a preacher after Last Dragon. And Julius Carey, who played Shonuff, unfortunately just died. But he was a larger-than-life character, and I loved him. The whole movie just had a magic about it from the beginning, from the time we started shooting it.
Now you said, Where Are They Now? Are you talking about, is that the show or movie, is that with Cherry Johnson from Family Matters,
no,
by chance?
No, this was a black version of Where Are They Now? I don't remember what they called it, but it was about Tymac. And Where Is Tymac Now? It wasn't Where Are They Now, but it's that kind of that was a kind of theme.
I was
interviewed just, I think, about a year ago.
That would be a small world. So let's talk about. I mean, this is the best scene. I don't even want to get off this scene. I know every fan of The Last Dragon is like loving this music in the background stuff. But let's talk about Vanity, okay? The hottest. Where did you find Vanity at? Like, and was she doing things beforehand, or was she originally discovered by you guys? Or
no, she was Prince's girlfriend.
Oh, okay,
and,
okay, okay.
And Barry brought her to the thing. Michael Schultz or Barry suggested her. She was so physically beautiful on camera. The camera loved her. And I'll tell you, she was a tough woman. She had a mouth like a jackhammer. And then so it's very ironic that we think of Vanity now as a preacher. When she found Jesus, she just changed her whole demeanor. But she was more fun to be with. We had a fun on-off relationship during the whole shoot. She was a difficult woman, but she was also a giving woman, and she was very, very talented. I remember Diana Ross is in that party, in the white scene at the end. I know. Remember Diana Ross's daughter is in it. My son was about 10. He's in it. So we look back at it now with a great deal of affection because it was a fun shoot.
Yeah, I mean, the casting process must have been a blast.
It was a ball. And how it lives on, Eric, is the thing that's amazing. I did some films for Arnold Schwarzenegger's for the governor when he was governor of California on the prison correction system. And when I was at Folsom Prison, which has five tiers, it was built in 1860 or something, so there's these five tiers, they found out that I did The Last Dragon. I don't know how the word got out, but I started yelling down lines from the movie from the fifth floor cell, and it was echoing through. It was like a house of Last Dragon. They were, once one started, it all just, the whole place was just yelling down lines. Look around, Leroy, see what you can find. Says, I use some kind of Rick James looking fool, you know, and eats chopsticks with his popsticks with his chopsticks. I mean, it people were yelling out lines. It was hysterical.
It sounds like it's a blast, man. It sounds like it's really, really, it's fun to do a film with you. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you on set.
My sets are always fun, I know there are some directors who you whisper when you go in. I remember seeing the rushes of Lord Attenborough's in London when I was doing a game show, and I was invited to watch the rushes. You couldn't say a word in the dailies, not a word until Lord Attenborough came in and sat down, and even then you had to whisper to the person. Well, when I'm in doing a film, anybody that wants to make a suggestion, provided they do it not over somebody's line, I listen to them, and if it's good, I say, listen to this. Tommy Prate, the chief grip, just came up with a great, great idea. Give him a round of applause, and I take it. So it's really, they say that film is collaboration, and that's what I really love to work that way, because I think you get more out of everybody.
What about writers? Are you looking for inspiring writers?
Well, it all begins with the script. If it's not on the script, it's not going to be on the screen. So, of course, I respect writers. I'm just writing my own stuff now. I have a hard time reading anybody else's material now because I still have 11 that I've written that I haven't gotten made. So instead, the process of writing a script is never over. So you always think if you make it better, someone's going to, understand what it is you're trying to say. So I'm working myself now. Vengador, I'm not writing. That's a man named John Kulhanek. And I have a Hispanic young man, Miguel Burunda, who I think could play Joaquin. He's the most handsome man, 6'4" tall, born on a horse in Mexico, and he's working with me and working with me so the authenticity of the Spanish is right. And we're working to make it a good script, so I'm working with the writer on that one. But the other ones I wrote myself and keep holding on for those.
What inspires you to move forward every day?
The joy of seeing something done. Seeing something on paper instead of thinking about it. For example, if you write, the only obligation you have is to sit at the computer for at least 3 hours and start. If it starts a little brown fox and then all of a sudden you start writing and then she came into the room and she looked at me and all of a sudden something takes over and helps you write the scene or writes the story. The other thing is the joy of getting a green light and knowing that you're going to see something that's in your mind and on your paper and you're going to see it with the living embodiment as the actors when they come to life, and being able to shape it and mold it and to work like a sculptor with clay when you're working with actors to try and make the scene come to life. There's nothing greater. It's my golf game. It's my tennis game. And I'd rather work at that than anything else in the world. So it's not a problem to get up in the morning and have a new idea and pursue something new. This morning, I'm pursuing the great racer, Bobby Rahal, because I heard that his son, Graham, 22 years old, is going to be racing for Bobby's team. And I made a documentary on Bobby Rahal's team when Danica Patrick first started driving for him, and I went to the Indy 500 and covered it and made a documentary out of it. So now I've approached Mr. Rahal and said I want to do a series, a reality series, Son of a Gun, or Son of a Big Man, or how fathers and sons work on the racetrack at 227 miles an hour talking on the radio together. I think it should be very exciting. So I'm excited about that. So I just have to, as I said to you before, a producer is the person that makes it happen.
Oh, I think producer is one of the most important people of the project. There's many, many different people, but the producer is the person that produces. You have to produce. Now, what would you, if you were to describe in your own words, what would you say a producer does with a project? What is a producer?
Well, it's a title that's been misused lately. Sometimes the producer is the person that puts up the money. Sometimes the producer is the person who says, I'm going to produce it because I'm your agent, and if you don't give me a production credit and a fee, you're not getting my talent. But then there's the working producer. And when I made a film, I made two films for Joe Papp, the great producer on Broadway. When we finished Much Ado About Nothing with Sam Waterston and Kathleen Widows, I gave him the credit list, and I was credited as the producer. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm the producer. I said, I produced it. He said, no, I made it happen. I'm the producer. You're the executive producer. Well, that's okay. With Joe Papp, I took exactly whatever I could get. But that was one definition that I picked up. I am the producer. I am the person that has the vision and makes it happen. That means assembles the elements, finds a script, works on the script, makes the script. Now, I could also be the writer and the director. But it starts with a germ of an idea, and the producer makes it happen.
So would you say it's better to be executive producer, producer, credit-wise? You know, if someone's trying to build their credits, executive producer, producer, associate producer,
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a credit, as long as it's an association with a good project, it doesn't matter, because if somebody is interested in you is going to say, what did you do to get the executive producer credit or the producer credit? And I say, basically, if you go back to Much Ado About Nothing, I didn't write it. Shakespeare did. I didn't cast it. Joe Papp did. I didn't get the deal. Joe Papp did. But what happened once he had the deal and the money is I figured out the elements. I put together the elements. So I should have been a producer in my terms. But for Joe, I was the executive producer because he was actually the producer, the person that made it happen.
So what would you say the hardest part of your job is?
Patience.
And the most enjoyable. Oh, go ahead.
And the people that you run into that don't understand. Right now, it's very difficult to pitch because nobody has any time because they're texting or taking phone calls. So you have to do what's called a sizzle reel, and that means capture their attention in 2 to 3 minutes with the project that you want them to accept. It used to be we would tell stories. When I was Alan King's partner, we'd go to a pitch meeting, and he'd tell 15 minutes of jokes, and then I'd get around to the subject that we were there, and I'd tell a story, and they'd listen. But now you go in, and if you don't get to the point within 2 or 3 minutes, and you don't make an impact verbally, you're not going to get. They're not going to hear you, and they're not going to be able to act on it. If, however, you spend the money and the time to put a sizzle reel together for 5 minutes at max, and put it on your MacBook Pro, put it on their desk, and make them watch it, then maybe you can get through to that mind that's so cluttered with so many other. Media sources and so many other ideas. The world, Eric, is going much faster than when I was younger, and you have to capture attention much sooner and much quicker and much more explosive way in order to get noticed.
I agree, and we have another caller, 912-5773. 912. I want to try to get everybody the chance to meet the great Rupert Hitzig. And you're on Easy Talk. Caller, you there?
Easy, it's James Navier. Just everybody listening from Orlando, brother.
Oh, hey, James, one of our biggest fans. James Napier is founder of a real great charity, the Sunshine Survivors Club. We really appreciate your support, James. Do you have any questions for our guests, or are you just calling in to support?
I'm just here for support, baby. Let it roll.
Definitely.
That's
so
it, James.
We appreciate you. All right, guys. So now, Rupert, what is it that is the most enjoyable part of your job?
The people. I love actors. I like my partners, Ed and Whit, Tim Considine, and all the people that are working with me on various projects, Miguel Barunda. They're there what make my joy, and their enthusiasm for the projects that we lay out there is just phenomenal. Right now, we're trying to put a co-production together in Ireland. So I have a friendship with an Irish co-producer named Bart Daly. And we talk every day on Skype, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to get the money from the tax fund in Ireland and make our movie happen. Well, I've never met Bart Daly, but we have a good time, and we toast each other across the seas on Skype. So the people.
I can't
the
do
people,
the Ireland accent, but I can do the English accent. Spotty, a little bit of English. But I don't know how to do that Ireland. I got to learn the Ireland. But I did catch that little Ireland accent while you're doing it. So do you act as well, or do you just produce?
No, I'm an actor. How could you be a producer without being an actor?
Exactly. So what would you say the most major influences have been in your life?
My mother, my father, my wife, Karen. And then if you go, I think the one director who made really sense to me was John Cassavetes. John Cassavetes and I were friends, and he told me on 82nd Street and Madison Avenue one day when I was in my 20s, just do it. I told him I wanted to direct, and he said, just do it. So the next film was Electroglide in Blue, and I said, nobody else is directing the script but me, and then I got the deal. So his line to me was, just do it, has never left me, and that if Nike didn't have it as a slogan, it would be on my name, Rupert Hitzig, just do it.
What? Okay. Now, how do you feel your brand has been so far, and how has it changed over the last few years? Let's say starting from your great movie, The Last Dragon, moving till now.
Well, branding, I made a big mistake with my life. The fact of the matter is that most people who get tremendously successful in an area stick to that area. I, because of my mother's influence, who thought I could do anything. If I played the violin, I'd be Yasha. If it's if I danced, I'd be Nureyev. And if whatever I did, I knew that she knew. She knew, and she put on my head that whatever you do, you're going to be great at it. So I'm a producer, a director, a writer. I've done documentary films. I've done features. I've done television shows. I've done sitcoms. I've done a game show in Paris for 4 months, created it and directed it with 10 cameras and documentaries and corporate films. And if it comes on and it's interesting, I do it. Now, with the problem with that, when I was really serious about being a film director, I got a job with Joe Papp, and I went to work at the Public Theater, and I produced. I was the head of the television department. So when I went back to the feature world, they said, oh, no, you can't do features. You're in television. Then I got another feature made. Then I went to pitch a television movie with Cliff Robertson, and it was Buzz Aldrin's story about his depression. And they said, oh, you can't direct it because you're a film producer. So then I did the television show, and then I went back to the movie business and 2 years later, and they said, oh, you can't do a movie because you're a television producer, because I got Return to Earth done on ABC. So there's a problem. I would give anybody advice. Focus on what it is you want to be and stick to it completely if that's important to you. If you want to have an eclectic life filled with fun, filled with adventure, and always fresh, do what I did. Take the next thing that comes along and say, I can do that too. I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And I did.
I sympathize with you, Rupert, because that's me in a nutshell as well. I've done the PR thing, the marketing thing, the hosting thing, the acting thing.
Then they don't
producing.
Know who you are.
Exactly.
Then they don't feel comfortable. They don't know who you are. The reason that I can't get a movie that the big studios made now is because whoever green lights it knows that the minute they say yes, that if anything goes wrong, and anything can go wrong in the movie business, somebody above them is going to say, how come you took a chance on that old guy? How come you said yes? So they don't want to. It's much easier for them to say no, no matter how good the project is, because then they're not on the line.
I have to say this. Now you're meeting me, and you're doing it the easy way. And I'm pretty decent at connecting situations. And let's see what happens. I want everybody listening still. Let's see what happens from this wonderful show and introduction and Rick Rosman introducing us, and see where it goes. Now, my last question for you, and before I ask this question, I'm going to go ahead and turn off the music and ask that you say, hey, I'm Rupert Hitzig, the producer of The Last Dragon, and you're listening to Easy Way Broadcasting. And if you could say I'm doing it the easy way after that, I know it's a lot to remember. You got it?
Yep.
All right. I'll count to three and then go ahead, please. One, two, three.
Hey, I'm Rupert Hitzig, and I'm the producer of a film called The Last Dragon, amongst others. I'm doing it the easy way with Eric Shuley and Zuli, and sitting here working from my phone and telling you some of the stories of my eclectic and kind of colorful life. Thanks, Easy Way. I had a good time.
Easy Way Broadcasting. Yeah, I appreciate it. All right, so my last question for you, Rupert.
I said Shuley, not Zuli.
Yeah, but you did fix it, so we're good. You want to do it again one more time? Just make sure.
Say
you're listening to Easy Way Broadcasting, and I'm doing it the easy way after you say your name and who you are. All right, one, two, three, go.
Hey, I'm Rupert Hitzig, and I'm the producer of the legendary film The Last Dragon, amongst others. I'm doing it the easy way on Easy Way with Eric Zuli. Thanks for listening.
Easy Way Broadcasting, yes, sir. And the last question.
Easy Way Broadcasting.
Yeah, thank you. So the last question is, how has social media made an impact in your life? Has social media helped you? How have you used social media? Let's talk a little bit about social media where, you know, it's a new world. You know what I mean?
It's a new world. I think the new world is the new future of the world. I think everything from YouTube, I think about things that I can produce on my own to put on YouTube to capture the eyes and the ears of people out there that I don't even know. One of the things that Facebook has done is reintroduce me to people that I may have forgotten about, that find me again and get in touch. That's really remarkable. And then if I have an idea or a thought, I can spread it around all over the place on both Facebook, Twitter, and the web. And I think it's a great addition to our lives, and that makes it the easy way to communicate.
Well, Rupert, thank you so much for being on the show, and we appreciate you doing that easy talk with us. And make sure everybody that you follow Rupert at his Twitter. Go ahead and tell him your Twitter, Rupert.
At Rupert.Hitzig.
On Twitter? That's your handle?
Yeah.
Your at?
Yep. Yep.
That was something different. Am I following the wrong person?
Did you follow?
I think I'm following
the
wrong person then. If that's your Twitter, I'm following the wrong person.
I don't know whether I'm not sure. I've got to check it out.
I
want to
make sure that people. I want to make sure that people follow you.
Oh, maybe it's Ugel Rube. At Ugel Rube.
Ugel Rube. That's what it is. Yes. Can
there
you spell
it is.
That, please?
That's another one. OOGLERUPE.
So do you want to get in touch with the? If you guys want to get in touch with a major film producer like Rupert, and you want to do it the easy way, make sure you follow him. And you can follow us at Easy Way Broadcast on Twitter. Tune in tomorrow to Shane Sparks. He's an Emmy-nominated celebrity dance choreographer. He's helping you get all those dance tips and dance secrets. He's known for So You Think You Can Dance and America's Best Dance Crew, and he's got some really amazing things coming up, and you can only know about what's coming up if you listen to the show. So that's Planet Dance on Easy Way Broadcasting tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and make sure to tune in on Sunday at 4 o'clock to Rick Rosman, Financial Advice, Charity-based show, The Rosman Experience, and 12-12-12 coming up with Real Housewives of Orange County's Sarah Winchester. She's doing Sarah's Secrets. So a lot of fun, fantastic shows coming up, guys. You have been listening to Easy Way Broadcasting with your man Eric Zuli on Easy Talk. Rupert, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. We
appreciate you.
Thank you, and give you a round of applause for being on the show and everything. And we will be talking real soon.
Talk to you soon, bud.
Bye-bye. All right, guys, so it's Easy Way Broadcasting. Tune in tomorrow, like I said, and tune in every week, Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're doing it the easy way, and that's how we do it, baby. I'm your host, Eric Easy Zuli. I'm glad that you listened to the show, and keep tweeting us. Give us your questions. Do it the easy way. We'll make it a little easier on you. See you next week. Hear you next week. Something like that.
You have been listening to Easy Talk and doing it the easy way on Easy Way Broadcasting with your host, internationally known radio and TV personality, actor, producer, and social media expert, Eric Easy Zuli. His work has been recognized by Congress. The City and County of Los Angeles have honored him with an award in his name. To find out more about Eric and Easy Way Broadcasting, follow him on Twitter at Eric Zuli and check him out on HollywoodItGuy.com. Thank you for listening. Something like that.